Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 36. And by the sound of the theme, yes, once again, it is time for another Shared Desk. I am T. Morris.
And I'm Pep Ballantyne? Yeah. Philippa Ballantyne.
Yeah, I know.
Philippa Jane Ballantyne.
It feels a little weird without the drop-ins.
I know.
I'm enjoying
not having drop-ins.
Oh, stop it. We're actually going to be drop-in free, but certainly not bell free, because even though we have bats in our belfry, did you see what I did there? We actually have a special guest to talk about a situation that has been happening for, a month now?
I don't know.
It feels like a long time.
I'm sure it's been brewing a while.
Yeah, it's been brewing for a while. And we've heard authors ad nauseum, we've heard publishers ad nauseum talk about this. Now we're going to hear it from someone who's really in the biz. Mystery guest, please sign in.
Hello, I'm Lori McLean, one of the founding partners of Forward Literary.
And you can find out more about them at forwardlit.com. Right? Forward Lit?
Forwardliterary.com.
Forward Literary.
F-O-R-E-W-O-R-D. So I got that part right.
Yes.
Literary.com. So, but you're going to have to buy, now Lori, you're going to have to buy forwardlit.com and have people reroute it back to the website.
Or we could edit that out.
I'm going to make sure that if somebody does
forwardlit.com, it comes to you guys.
Yes.
There we go. Ooh, buy that right away. you've heard us talk about Lori McLean before. She is our infinite agent of awesome, or our agent of infinite awesome. It depends on the day that I'm typing out some kind of post about her. And we have been wanting to bring Lori on the show yet again to talk about the Amazon v. Hachette matter. So you've heard James Patterson talk about it at BEA. I can't wait to get Lori's spin on that. And then you've heard J.A. Conrath blather on, probably scraping the content from someone else's blog. Because he put his snark. Hey, that makes it original content. You've heard both sides. So Lori, in the words of an agent, could you please tell us what in God's name is going on between Amazon and Hachette?
Okay, well, I have some really insightful comments, I think, Pete and Pip. Basically, from an agent's perspective, when books, if we can step back into the 50s, let's step in the 50s.
That's why we have drop-ins.
When agents first came on board to help broker deals between authors and publishers, the paradigm that they were using was that they wanted to split profits 50-50 between the author and between the publisher. So the publisher went away and they figured out all of their expenses. So there was a physical expense of, you know, actually printing the book, binding the book, distributing the book. There was all the overhead associated with the buildings in New York and the editors and the production people and all of their personnel. And everything else associated with that. Anyway, they went and they figured it out, and that's how they came up with this, you know, hovering around 10% as the author's royalties. Okay, so fast forward, 50, 60 years?
Sorry, that's fast forward. That's my fast forward noise.
God, I miss my drop-ins. I miss my drop-ins so much right now.
All right, so we're whooshing forward in time, 60 years, and now it's, in the 2008-2014 realm. And agents said, well, you know, there's almost no incremental cost to create an ebook because at the beginning, maybe you needed some people to do formatting. But even now, that's pretty mundane and low level of a task. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know, you guys might disagree with me.
I've done that, yes.
I've heard Pip use many words describing putting together ebooks. Mundane is not one of them.
Well, after a certain point, you do get used to it, and it becomes a little easier, I got to say.
Fair enough. But anyway, there were you get rid of the idea of returns, because when somebody buys an ebook, some ridiculous amount, like 95% of them, are not returned. You get rid of all the production costs, the printing, the binding, the, what have you. The distribution costs, they all go away because you just put them up online and people buy them and download them. So what you're stuck with is really all the costs that were already accounted for in that original 50-50 split between the author and the publisher. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm belaboring this point is because I don't think it's coming out a lot. And when publishers said, okay, we'll give 25% royalty for ebooks, agents, you know, were up in arms and said, no, it should be 50-50. We should get 50%. And that's been the battle we've been fighting for about 6 years now, is that little by little, maybe you could get up to 35%. If you were a best-selling author, maybe you could get some kind of an escalating royalty going on for ebooks. But pretty much for most authors, you know, you're stuck at 25%, meaning the publisher gets 75%. And if you look at their financials, for the quarter or for the year, you see that that is making a huge dent, or a huge, you know, positive dent. I don't know what's the opposite of a dent. A pimple. No.
A bulge.
I don't know. Some kind of a hump. It's making them a lot of money.
It's kind
of
like, you know, John Hamm on Mad Men. You know, oh my God, he's bulging.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're making a lot of money on ebooks. Now, if they had given some of that percentage back to the authors, I don't think it will be sitting out there like such a huge plum for Amazon to look at it and say, huh, we're getting X amount of royalties, or, you know, a percentage of the ebook sales. The publisher's getting, you know, three times that. The author's getting half of what we're getting. So we want some more from the publisher because we don't think the publisher should have so much. That is the crux of what the problem is that Hachette is negotiating right now. And they're negotiating it with Warner Brothers on their DVDs. They're negotiating with that company Bonnier or Bonnier or whatever it is in Germany, a very small publisher, but they got caught up in the same thing. Mm-hmm. So Amazon's being inflexible, saying, no, we want more. And Hachette's being inflexible, saying, no, we're not going to give you more. And that's where we have it, because Hachette knows they're the first of all the gang of publishers who the U.S. Department of Justice, you know, got for colluding. So whatever they do is going to be the model moving forward for all these other publishers, and they've been prohibited from collaborating, thank God, I guess, because they all would be collaborating on this right
they
now.
Would be. So basically, Amazon noticed the bulge.
Amazon noticed John Hamm's bulge.
They did, and they said, we want what that is.
You know, it's funny. I find it just slightly ironic that there is a German company that Amazon is picking a fight with, because I would imagine the Germans would be the first one to say, you know, this fighting war on two fronts, not a good idea.
Three fronts?
Did not work for us back in the 40s. I'm going to try it now. But, you know, so what it sounds like, I think we lost Laurie on that one. Terrible analogy, but true. Yeah. What we're hearing from you is that there really is no good guy, bad guy in this fight. It sounds like two
behemoths.
I was actually going to use the term bullies. It sounds like two playground bullies that are getting into fist fights to find out who can be the biggest bully
and who can take our lunch.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's really what's happening here, isn't it? The writers are the ones who are getting hurt in this. Correct.
But writers are definitely getting killed in this. This is just exactly what happened with Simon & Schuster when they were fighting against Barnes & Noble last year. It's what happened the year before with Macmillan and Amazon when Amazon removed all the buy buttons from Macmillan as John Sargent was flying back to New York from Seattle. Yeah. So, yeah, pretty nasty. Amazon plays hardball, for sure. But here's another thing. Now, you know, you can call me a conspiracy theorist or paranoid or whatever, but everybody is getting really used to that 70-30 split with Amazon for self-published books.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to say at some point Amazon could say, you know what, we think you guys are making too much money off that. Let's make it 50-50.
Thank you.
We wanted to grow a market, but now let's make it 50-50. That's more fair because we are the distribution channel.
Lauren,
and we do
give
you all these tools. What?
Thank you. Thank you. See, this is the part that's been working on my last nerve. I'm just going to come out and say it. If I hear one more person call Hugh Howey or J.A. Conrath a hero, I'm going to cut me a bitch. Because these guys, see, when these guys like, particularly Conrath loves to be, he put this very scathing, snarky blog post about James Patterson's words at BEA. Now, while I will say that, yes, Patterson is kind of towing the line for publishers, because let's face it, the publishers are being
old school bestseller. He's a mega bestseller.
Exactly.
He's buttering the bread that he's been eating
for years.
Of course
he is. I get that. But Conrath, in the same spin, he's pulling along Amazon's chain as well. He's pulling along the company line for Amazon because he's like, oh, but we have all these record profits, derp, derp, derp. You know, first off, I mean, it's for a discussion for another time. The whole thing with the data guy, who we still don't know who he is. This guy could be an accountant in Pig's Knuckle, Arkansas, for all we know. And his numbers, even high end economics have said, you know what, these numbers, they're skewed. But the point I'm getting at is that Conrath is doing the exact thing that Patterson's doing. Patterson's pulling for the publishers. Conrath is pulling for Amazon. And
you know, it reminds me of Congress, T.
Wow.
That's a painful thing
That's
to say.
That's a painful thing. Yeah, but the difference is Amazon and Hachette are the difference between them and Congress. They're making progress.
Yeah, they are making
progress.
And they're making money.
Yeah, they may
money.
Actually get something done. You're
exactly.
right. You're right.
But the idea that Amazon is some kind of victim in this, because I've seen people try to say, oh, these publishers think that they can just rule over Amazon. Poor Amazon.
Amazon wants to eat the world.
No kidding. Have you noticed? I don't think this is a coincidence.
Which is a fine thing for a
company,
probably, but you know.
They're more similar than they are different.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's really like two equals fighting over the same
I do not think it is happenstance. Jeff Bezos, bald guy. Lex Luthor, bald guy, okay? I'm just saying.
Have you ever seen him both in the same room?
Exactly. You've never seen Jeff Bezos and Lex Luthor.
Does he carry around a piece of green,
and,
shiny green stuff?
Does he make blue meth in underwear? I ask you this. I ask you this. I
know you can buy it at Amazon, so who knows if he wears it or not.
And if you've got Prime, a drone will deliver it for you on your doorstep.
Exactly.
So the thing is, I've actually been approached. I know Pip's been approached. There are a lot of authors and a lot of people who want to be authors who are trying to figure out the best way to handle this. So
Stephen Colbert said, "Go to Pals.
Go to Pals
and buy this book."
Barnesandnoble.com, they are really savvy about it. They said, hey, if you buy two Hachette books from us, we'll give you a third one for free. So now here's my question. These tactics of going to Pals, of going to Barnesandnoble.com, will that really, I mean, how realistic is it to boycott Amazon? We're not going for the bulge this time.
We're going for the dent.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, right.
People love their Prime.
It's going to make 0.01% of a difference.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people just, they're used to buying stuff from Amazon. Everybody likes Amazon Prime.
Oh, I love my
people
Prime.
Have
Sorry.
Short memory spans, especially Americans, you know. As soon as, you know, something else is going to catch their attention 2 weeks down the road, and that will be the last you hear of the Amazon Hachette spat until the next publisher has to do it. And I'll tell you what, Penguin Random House is bigger than the other four big publishers put together. So I'll be interested to see what kind of a negotiation goes on between them and Amazon. I'm really interested in that. Hachette is small. I mean, even though it's a multi-billion-dollar large international conglomerate, so I'm not feeling too sorry for them.
No.
It's not a mom-and-pop store.
But Penguin Random
House dwarfs everything. So they're about the only ones who could really stomp into the room and make Amazon at least notice.
So you're saying right back now. The Penguin?
Yeah.
Back a Penguin. I like penguins.
Yeah.
But so.
Yeah, don't you have to say something like you're with Penguin Random House?
Oh, yes,
and,
yes, sorry. Ace Books is part of Penguin, but I've always liked Penguin.
We love our random penguin.
We love our random
penguin. That's what we call the merger over here, the random penguin. You know,
I know. It's so much better.
And the weird thing is, when I say random penguin, I think about those Bud Ice commercials from years back where, you know, a guy would be enjoying his beer and then suddenly you hear in the background, doo-bee-doo-bee-doo.
And there was a penguin
sitting there with the Bud Ice in one hand and it was just looking at you going,
and
the slogan was "Drink Bud Ice, but beware of the penguins."
Amazon might be
maybe
thinking
they'll
about
resurrect
it.
That.
Yeah, yeah, they should. But
so what? Do you think is going to happen with this latest stoush? Is Hachette gonna?
Is
Hachette? To back
yeah,
down,
who's gonna, who's going to fold? Who do you think is going to? Who do you think is going to blink first?
Well, here's the thing: is that all we have is rumor to tell us what they're actually even arguing over. So I doubt we're ever going to know exactly what the final deal is.
But it's safe to say that one thing that we do know, one thing that's very clear, authors are getting pummeled either way.
Yeah. Yeah, because whatever's going to cost more, then they're going to say we have less money to market to authors, we have less money to pay in advances. They'll use it as, you know, to their advantage as some kind of an excuse.
Well, I heard somebody say that because the pre-order buttons aren't available on Hachette Books, especially for first-time new authors, it's painful for their series. It might, you know, mean that they don't get a next book from Hachette, or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it really is hurting the mid-list authors. You hear about the James Pattersons, and Malcolm Gladwell has gone public saying that his sales are down by 50%.
Ouch.
But Malcolm Gladwell is going to sell his next book.
He's going to be okay.
There. He'll make up for it in the long tail. But the ones who are mid-list authors who need the good next book, or else they won't get a next contract, they're screwed.
And see, this is where I feel like some authors who are rattling their sabers behind Conrath saying, you should be going with Amazon, you should be going with Amazon.
You don't know.
You really don't know what Amazon is going to do next. That's the first thing that people need to accept.
They are not your friend. They're
there
to make money.
No, they are not your friend. They were good to us last summer when I got invited to do Kindle Worlds. Thanks for that sale, by the way, Laurie. But the truth is,
they're a corporation out to make money.
Yeah, at any time they could go, hey T, you know those royalties you're collecting from Kindle World? Yeah, we paid for those stories, you know, we paid them up front, so you know what, we're gonna cut those out. I mean, they can really it's a bit like the Affordable Care Act, when people said when my father would argue against it, and he would go, I don't want somebody telling me who I can see and who I can't see. I go, Dad, the insurance companies already do that.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Amazon at any time can step up and change the rules, because in a weird, and this is
their
something
sandbox,
I wanted,
it's their sandbox.
It's
right?
Their sandbox. But here is another question I would have for you, Lori. Is this something that the publishers have made? Is this a bed that the publishers have made for themselves and now they just don't like lying in it? Or is this something that the entire writing community, both readers and writers, have made their bed with Amazon?
Well, Amazon distributes 60% of the books, you know, ebook and print books in the United States.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So
that's a
they're
lot of books.
Huge, huge gorilla. That's a huge, you know, books need to be distributed. They have to get from the publisher to somewhere. If they're print, yeah, that's one way. But also, you know, even ebooks have to get distributed via some mechanism, and Amazon is that mechanism.
It's so convenient.
After that, Barnes & Noble is teensy compared to them.
Well, we know.
So I don't know. I wouldn't say the publishers made Amazon grow so big. It was definitely the readers. But look what they did. They gave you books at a discount rather than having to pay the full price.
Right.
They gave you books that were delivered, you know, first of all, you know, a couple days, then the same day, then, you know, by drone in the same minute. I don't know. But, you know, all these things, they are innovating, and the public is saying, we want it. We want more like that. Yes, we like it. We will do Prime. Now they're doing TV shows. They've got Amazon Studio. They've got readers who are first reviewers. They get the books early through their Vine program so that they leave reviews before the book is even, you know, while it's on pre-order.
Yeah.
Unless it's a chef, then you don't get that. But,
you
know, but so they're innovating, and they continue to innovate, and so that's why they're so powerful. Maybe the publishers could take a book, a page out of that book, and start innovating a little bit more, because they're being too greedy. That's why they're in this position, and, you know, maybe they need to rethink their relationship with their authors and stop thinking about just the best-selling, you know, handful of authors is going to be what they make all their money off of, and the other ones are, you know, just kind of an afterthought.
Now, what about authors, though? And I'm talking about authors on both sides of the fence, the people who are currently published with Amazon, and the people who are the people that are published with Hachette or any. Or have just signed a contract with any of the big houses. What can authors do to either salvage some of the damage that's been done, or even continue to survive as authors while this fight goes on?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that this is very much. This scandal is inside the publishing industry, And it's huge inside the publishing industry. But if you step outside of the publishing industry, it doesn't have much traction. You know, people say, like, oh, I can't buy J.K. Rowling's Robert Galbraith, you know, the second book in his series. Fine, I'll go to BarnesandNoble.com or I'll go somewhere else. If they really want it, they'll buy it. What is hurting the most are the authors who don't have the name recognition at Hachette because nobody's saying, I want to buy, you know, Michael J. Sullivan's Ryuria series, you know, they don't know him, so they're not right. buying it. They're not looking for it. So, yeah, his sales will probably go down because they can't find it on an impulse buy at Amazon where it says, if you like this, you might like this.
Right.
Use
right.
that one I mean, click.
They're getting pummeled by that kind of lack of marketing. In fact, it's like negative marketing because now they're leading people away from Hachette titles. So
well, we actually had a conversation. Well, I should rephrase that. I saw, I don't know if Pip saw it, but I saw it on Twitter, Elizabeth Baer. I mean, she's a name. She's a name uh-huh. in our genre. And she has said because of these hijinks, she's getting pummeled. It's yeah. actually cutting into her. So, I mean, is there really anything that authors can do to help themselves.
They can speak out about it. You know, that's it. They can talk about how, I think every author who's a Hachette author should be blogging about how heinous this is and putting direct links in that blog to other outlets to buy their book.
Yeah.
Well, and here's something I've been also curious about because I think this kind of also ties into the Amazon Hachette thing. Because of the Amazon Hachette shenanigans, it's funny because Pip and I have noticed an uptick in people asking us, where's the best place to buy your books to benefit the author? So I'm going to ask you, do you think authors, in a sense, are going to become, in the future, salesmen and distributors of their books?
Because one more thing we need to heap on the back of the creativity engine. Huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a pain in the ass. I mean, we will not.
I think you have to be able to answer those sort of questions
yeah.
and say, you know, where's the best place to go? Where would you like to see us go?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we usually say go to the.
It just seems like we're asking more and more of the authors and less of the publishers. I mean, if the authors are also going to do the distribution and the marketing, what the heck are the publishers doing?
Well,
why would you even go with them?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it's fun, and it's funny you should say that because one of the things that I thought is sort of setting a very dangerous precedent is, and I say danger with the big quotes. I mean,
danger, Will.
Yeah, danger. I personally think Jeff Vandermeer is doing okay for himself, but Jeff just released in 1 year, he is releasing 3 books.
Yeah,
and this seems to be this apparently, and I read a couple of articles about how this is some sort of new trend that publishers may be expect. Do you think publishers are not going to be expecting that kind of binge writing from authors who they will just basically take a trilogy and just literally throw it out there within 1 year? I mean, is that something that you think is going to be an expectation so the publishers can try to quote unquote innovate?
Let me put it to you this way:
okay.
If you can do it, they will consume it. If you can't do it, they won't, you know, demand it of you. But you know, I just came back from a big editorial trip to New York, along with Book Expo America, the, you know, watering of the tribes that happens every year. and they were telling me, hey, you know, if somebody could write 3 books in a year, then we could put them out one right after the other, or we could put them out every other month. And that would be really good because we could have that pre-order button for the book 2. At the minute you finish the last page of that first book, you're going to pre-order that second book, and then you get it a month later.
But isn't that going to burn out authors?
Yeah, it's going to burn out authors. It's also going to reward bad writing. But what they're seeing is with a lot of self-published authors, you know, it's almost like there's two different markets, T. And I hope that this is temporary, but it could become even more diverged. Is that you get some people who, if they buy something for 99 cents online and it's self-published, they don't really care about the quality of the writing. They care about the quality of the story. Someone who doesn't have really good writing chops could still make a lot of money. in a self-published environment. And then with traditional publishing, no, you've got to have your writing chops down as well as be a great storyteller, as well as have your pacing and your amazing characters and all of that. You have to have the whole package together. And then that's only to get into the door of the traditional publisher, and then their editors are really good at bringing that out even more. And so you've got a really fine product. The sad part is that, you know, maybe nobody ever finds their way to your book because fewer and fewer people are going into bookstores and they're all buying them at Amazon, where they just use an algorithm that says, oh, 100 copies of this has sold, great, let's say this is going to be a daily deal. And, you know, and on we go.
I think for me, and I like to get Pip's opinion on this too, what's been really bugging me about the whole Amazon Hachette thing is that people are expecting writers to take sides.
Yeah.
And I
that's
feel
wrong.
Like, yeah, I honestly.
We're just the poor saps caught in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. I was describing it to a writer who was going to be joining our local group. She was asking me to explain the Amazon Hachette thing, and I said, well, picture this. Picture two giants, you know, striding across the countryside, and they're basically going to duke it out. Well, in between the two giants, there's this tiny little village. That's where all the writers are. And I just feel like if I was to take – I don't want to take it. I don't feel like writing should be an issue of taking sides. I don't know if you've ever read any of the posts from Chuck Wendig's blog, Terrible Minds, over at terribleminds.com. And he's even – he has said as much. He's like, you know, this isn't an us and them thing. You know, we should be concentrating on writing and working with what's best
for
us.
That's the funny thing to me is that the publishers and Amazon and all the other big guys are fighting over these things, but they're not actually creating the things.
Right.
And they're going to crush the people who are creating the things, which in turn shoots themselves in the foot.
It reminds me a bit of when writer strikes happen. When writer strikes happen, you know, people think, oh, it's the writers. You know, so what? Hey, look, I've worked with actors. Some actors, they live and breathe by the script. And if they can't, if they don't have a script in front of them, it's gonna get bumpy. And I simply say one word when people say, do writing strikes matter? Moonlighting. Moonlighting was a great show in its heyday. And when the writing strike occurred, it killed the show. It absolutely killed the show. There have been a lot of shows that have Heroes. Fell under the as one of the collateral damage, and Heroes in that first season was a brilliant, airtight show. But the point I'm getting at is that it concerns me that in my opinion there is one side to this, and it's the casualty. It's the writers, because people on Amazon who are publishing with Amazon, they're saying, see, I told you so, but now they are completely dependent on the man.
Yeah, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket, as my granny said.
Yeah, exactly. and for these folks who have just signed on with Hachette, and they're like, hey, my first book, what do you mean it's not open for pre-sales, you know? I mean,
it's kind of depressing.
Done before you start, you know? Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
It really is horrible.
So we can round it up by saying that the only thing those authors who are kind of caught in the crossfire can do is try and trumpet and guide their fans
to other places,
to other things.
To other places,
maybe
find their
supporting
books.
Each other, if you know other Hachette authors that maybe are coming out, and guide people towards them as well, so that they get some publicity and people know that their books are at least coming out. I mean, that's all you can really do.
In the media, you're only going to hear about the Malcolm Gladwells and the J.K. Rowlings and the James Pattersons,
right,
you know, because
right.
that's what sells newspapers.
Right.
And that's what people want to hear about. But the great unwashed Hachette authors who are, well, not really unwashed, but you know what I mean.
Well, that's why
regular folk.
Think, yeah.
So.
Well, and that was why I was so impressed with what Colbert did, because Colbert pointed out a guy who, this was his debut book. On his show, Colbert.
And it was the number one seller at Powell. So, like, right on. Maybe Stephen Colbert should start a distribution.
Yeah, every week he could be
every
like
week.
Oprah.
Yeah, he could be the new Oprah.
And he could keep Powell's in business for...
No kidding.
For a long time.
I mean, and see, because I know that Conrath called out Colbert in his column, and some other people have called out Colbert. But the thing was, Colbert was like, "Yeah, I'm published with Hachette, but I'm Stephen Colbert," and he wasn't being arrogant.
Exactly.
He's being honest. I'm Stephen freaking Colbert. But this guy, you don't know, and go get it on Pals. And I mean, I admire
the fact.
He probably
saved that guy's bacon.
He did.
He saved that guy.
And really, has Joe Conrath ever sold anybody's books other than his own?
Thank you. Thank you.
If we have some listeners who know some Hachette authors, some authors affected by this, maybe we could
absolutely
mention them and, you know, link back to them, get them on the blog.
Elizabeth Baer, find her books, buy her books from Powell's or BarnesandNoble.com. Heck, BarnesandNoble.com's got a sale now. You buy two Elizabeth Baer books from Hachette, you get a third book free. Boom.
That's great.
Boom.
Good.
You know?
More. We want more of that. Let's be creative. Let's find a way that we can make lemonade out of the lemon.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's all we can really do, us poor peasants on the ground.
So now that you've come back from BEA, where the topic of conversation, as you were talking about, is Amazon v. Hachette, and now Amazon is taking on a company in Germany, and now they're taking on Warner Brothers.
Some little company called Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers. We just, and just real quick aside, we just saw a Warner Brothers movie tonight. We saw Edge of Tomorrow, and let me tell you something.
Was it good?
It was really good.
This movie is absolutely badass, and sadly, sadly, I think it's going to be the Pacific Rim of this summer. And what I mean by that is people are not going to see this movie for all the wrong reasons. If you've got an issue with Tom Cruise, put it aside.
He's good in this.
He's good in this. Emily Blunt.
Oblivion, so I'm going to go see it.
Oh, yes.
Excuse me, ladies, I'm having a moment.
Oh, just because she saw her
thinking
guns.
About Emily Blunt.
She does have some impressive muscles on her arms there.
And thank you. I mean, and not only that, okay, this is a great little bit of trivia about Edge of Tomorrow. It was released on D-Day. It was released on the 70th anniversary of D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something. If you ever wanted to know what it was like to do a landing on D-Day, I think they captured it because, I mean, they do a beachhead invasion in Edge of Tomorrow, and it is phenomenal. I mean, Pip and I,
and you see it,
we were white knuckled through that scene, and it's a great film, great film. Anyway, they're now getting into a pissing contest with Amazon. So the question is, when's this going to end? And what did you walk away from the discussions over at BEA?
Okay, so first of all, BEA was in New York. New York's the center of publishing, so it was very much skewed to support Hachette. Mm-hmm. How can we support Hachette? Amazon is the big bad. We want to destroy Amazon, right? Whereas if Amazon was destroyed, we'd have no distribution for any books. So it's just silly.
Yes.
When I said earlier that it's like Congress, this is what I really meant, that there's a lot more, they're much more similar to each other than they are dissimilar. Mm. And so all they're arguing about is one little point. They're getting a ton of media coverage on it, inside publishing, and leaking out a little bit to be, you know, in the mainstream media.
Right.
It's gonna get settled because they can't let it ride like this forever, and we may never know exactly what the settlement is.
Is it gonna get worse? Do you think?
Worse meaning the next company, because you know, first because of that Department of Justice judgment, each of the companies, I think it's like 4 to 6 months apart. So the first one is Hachette. I think the next one might be HarperCollins, or it might be Simon & Schuster. I can't remember. And then Macmillan, and then Penguin. So whatever Hachette comes up with, then Amazon will use that as a boilerplate for the next one they're going to negotiate with. And then that might go on and on and on.
Well, for people like me who honestly might have missed the news about the Department of Justice thing, could you give a quick summary of what's going on with that?
Absolutely. When Apple decided to do the iBookstore, they met to their tech company. They met with all the big publishers and said, hey, we want you to adopt a new model called the agency model, and that means you guys will set the price for the book, and then we'll discount it 30%. Uh-huh. And that's called the agency model. Now, Amazon hated that because then all the publishers came to Amazon and said, hey, we really like this way that this agency model that Apple's doing, so we want you to do that too, because up until then, Amazon could discount the books to, you know, any price they wanted, and they were discounting the books to below what they were paying for the books. I don't know about you, but when China tries to dump steel like that in the United States, we call it restraint of trade and, you know, go bananas and ballistic and you know, put some tariffs on it. But for some reason, it was okay for Amazon to do that. So anyway, they did the agency model for a while, and then all of a sudden the Department of Justice said this is collusion between all of these publishers, and this is a monopoly, because the publishers were so used to talking to each other about this stuff, and it is illegal. They'd go to lunch together, they'd send emails to each other, and of course all this became public record, and Judge Cote just, like, you know, slammed them to the mat and said, no, you all have to pay millions of dollars, and you can never collude again, you bad, bad publishers. And Apple is going to have to pay lots of money. They're still the only one embroiled in this, because they said, well, you were the ringleader and you made all of this happen.
Wow.
Yeah. So okay. That's what happened. But what she did was, to prevent the collusion in the future, each one of the publishers had to be on a schedule to negotiate their next deal with Amazon. So Hachette is really the first one. And it's too bad because they're the smallest of all the publishers. It would have been better if it could have been
Penguin.
Random Penguin.
Random Penguin comes into the room.
Random
House was never even in this judgment. They never did the agency model, or they were never accused of collusion. So that's why they're last, because they argued, well, even though we're you know, merging with Penguin, who was in this lawsuit, you know, we were never in it. So
I think
that's going to be the name of our Jaeger baby. It's going to be it. You and I. We're gonna pilot the Random Penguin.
Random Penguin.
So do you think that after the dust settles, and we, like you said, we will never know the details between Amazon and Hachette, do you think it's going to be easier with the other publishers? And do you think that the writers will still continue to be the cannon fodder? Yeah.
Well, I think what's happening is that Amazon has cut their margins. Since day one, their margins were so low that, you know, they would make $100 billion and they'd only make, you know, $10 million in profit.
Only
their
$10
margins million. They're so low, ridiculously low. So their shareholders said, we need you guys to make more money. So they did things like, they raised the price of Amazon Prime from $79 to $99. They are now looking at all of their distribution agreements and saying, okay, it's okay for print. You know, we're covering the cost of having the books in our warehouse, and we've got a pretty efficient system there. But for ebooks, e-publishers are making way too much money, and we now want you to share some of that with us. That's basically what it is.
Mm.
So that it gets back to my first point, which was that if the publishers just would have kicked some of those royalty percentages for ebooks back to the author, it wouldn't have been this big, fat, juicy piece of fruit out there for the serpent Amazon to come around and say, I think I'll take a bite. I want a bite of that.
Bite off my head, another one grows back.
I just don't see any way that authors are going to win. That's why I say Everybody should be a hybrid author, and you should do some self-publishing, some small press publishing, some traditional publishing with the big guys, and then you'll have a steady revenue stream, and you'll be somewhat safe from this kind of a situation coming down.
All those eggs must be in different baskets.
It's very true.
Okay, well, it's been lovely having you on the shared desk.
It's always great. Always great having you on, Agent of Infinite Awesome. And could you just tell a little bit, we want to give you the platform, even though we have given you the platform for the show, we want to give you the platform to talk about Forward Literary. I mean, we've had you on the show twice, but I don't think you've ever just told people about Forward
how
Literary
awesome.
And how awesome you guys are. So, by all means, talk.
Okay. You guys are like the perfect Forward client. So if anybody's listening to this show and they know about your, you know, all the things that you guys are doing, from role-playing games to podcasting to doing your own anthologies with other people to doing your own publishing of your own work to working with traditional publishers to working with smaller presses, you're doing it all. And that demands that you know a lot about a lot of things, and it sometimes amazes me how much you guys accomplish.
You can come on anytime, Laurie.
Anytime. I'm just going to listen to this segment in an infinite loop. I'm just going to wake up in the morning and hear Laurie go, "You are the perfect clients."
You are the perfect clients. And you know, you were doing this before. Forward's only been around for a year and a half. but I wanted to be the change, not be reporting or reacting to the change. I feel the same thing with you guys, is that you were out there before podcasting was big and you were making it big. You were out there doing your own self-publishing of anthologies in steampunk with the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences before. I mean, you had me write that into the contract, you know?
Oh,
so there was all of that thoughtfulness going into creating a career for yourselves, which was not only going to be lucrative, but was going to be long-lasting. And I think that's one of the things that never gets mentioned about hybrid authors, is their ability to keep doing what they love for a long time. And that's what Forward wants to do, too. Yes, we represent people who will never be hybrid authors. They're only going to sell to traditional publishers. That's fine. But my heart, what I really look for, is somebody who is always learning and always wanting to do something new and try something new and be forever young. And that's kind of the way I look at you guys.
But enough about Forward Literary. Talk more about us.
You're immature, even though you are.
Well, I have to say, you Forward Literary, Alex White, our good friend, is now part of our stable, and we were so excited to hear that he was with the awesomest literary agency we know.
And part of what makes Forward Literary different, part of what makes it different, I think Lori is not tooting the horn quite loud enough. Part of what they do is they not only help you with finding a home for your work, but they also help you in promoting your work. Estelle over at Forward Literary did some amazing work for us in landing us many book blogging spotlights in different places, and we were very thrilled to have Forward Literary, you know, behind us in that respect. And then Lori, for those of you who have visited MinistryPeculiarOccurrences.com, Lori landed us a gig with the folks over at Paranormal Radio.
Oh, wait, which was a lot of fun.
Which was a lot of fun, and a new place for us to spread our wings. So, I mean, really, I think that's what Lori is talking about. The agency is very aggressive in not only taking care of the client and landing a home for their work, but also promoting the clients. And I think that's part of it. And you can hear the enthusiasm in Lori's voice, as well as the knowledge of what Lori knows. She could kill us all collectively. She is.
I could bore you for days.
She is. No. She is the Professor Xavier of Forward Literary.
So can we ask Lori? I mean, I don't know if you're looking for new clients, but I know you've got
new agents
looking
in your stalls.
For clients. Is there any
particular
thing?
Yes, we are now up to 7 agents. Woo-hoo! I can't believe it. I met them all in New York, and because we're a virtual agency, we have 3 in New York, 1 in Chicago, 1 in San Diego, and 2 in the San Francisco Bay Area. And then we've got Estelle Halleck doing our PR in New York as well. And just great. We do everything, you know, from nonfiction to literary fiction, commercial fiction, all the genres, middle grade, all the way down to picture books. We were saying the only thing we didn't do was inspirational and erotica, and Connor Goldsmith stood up and said, "I'll do erotica." So I'm like, "You go, Connor."
I like Connor. Connor's Alex's agent, right?
So basically, Connor's going to do it.
I think he is.
He's going to do you.
Oh, my God. Connor is fantastic. We call him the king of schmooze. It's like he knows everybody. He makes everything happen. So I was like, woo, I love you already. And I've only known you 15 minutes. So.
And now that Connor's doing erotica, we can call him the Bulge.
Oh,
let's call Connor the Bulge. So if Forward is accepting submissions, where would people go to submit their work?
Okay, so you go to forwardliterary.com. Make sure you spell it right. Come on, we're all in publishing, right? Don't misspell the word forward, F-O-R-E-W-O-R-D.
Yes.
Anyway, forwardliterary.com, and then we have a forward menu thing that drops down, and it shows all of our agents. It tells you exactly what they're looking for and how to submit to them, and that's the best place to go.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Okay, I think we can wrap this up with a bow.
It is always a pleasure having you on, enlightening our audience.
I feel more knowledgeable.
I do.
Anytime.
Yeah, you bet. So so thank you, Lori, for joining us on the show. Pip, do you have anything in closing to say?
No, just
okay.
Awesome. I feel better now that I know what's actually...
I have something to say.
I do.
The share better desk...
Better to burn out than fade away?
No, it's just the share desk is a non-commercial, no-derivative, share-alike 3.0 United States license protected by the Creative Commons. You can find out more about them at creativecommons.org. And Lori, again, it's always a pleasure. And for those of you listening, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the ride.
Catch you later.